Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
So, Robert.
Yeah.
What is an astronomical unit?
I don't know. What is an astronomical unit?
It's one hell of a big apartment.
Oh.
Welcome to the podcast, guys. This is Allison, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, a science writer at HowStuffWorks.com.
And that comes to you from Bruno in Switzerland. We've been putting the call out for jokes lately on Facebook.
Yeah, some nice cheesy science-related jokes.
There's no reason that scientists can't be humorous.
And there's no reason that scientists can't smell fabulous, right?
Right, right. So today we're talking about the science of perfume. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the worst smell you like. You know, sort of the smell you're not supposed to like, but you do. For me, it's
kind of a weird concept, but go on.
Well, you know, it smells bad for you. You're not supposed to be sniffing it.
Oh, okay,
you know, I'm not talking about, you know, sniffing something to get, you know, an effect, but just, you kind of like the smell of it. Like okay. Gasoline is mine.
Oh, okay. It's like, I'm not talking about huffing, but gasoline smells fabulous.
No, but I do like it. Also on that vein, rubber cement.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that makes perfect sense.
Wait, what's yours?
Well, I mean, I'm one of these people, I tend not to think of like smells I like as being like horrible.
Right.
Well, like one example. Okay. Durian fruit kind of gets a bad rap for being.
It does indeed. Have you ever eaten one, by the way?
I have, yeah. That's the thing. It's like I finally got to try it when my wife and I went to Thailand last year. And granted, we were outdoors in a well-ventilated area. And okay, everybody's just like, oh, durian fruit, it smells horrible, blah, blah, blah. I mean, not the people who sold it to us, obviously. But you know, you hear that especially here in the States. And I really wanted to try it and give it a fair shake because I'm kind of thinking like this is kind of like Western, you know, chauvinism. It's like, saying I don't want this fruit.
You're an equal opportunity fruit
guy. So I gave it a shot and it was really good. I mean, I think the thing with the durian fruit is that you kind of have to go into it expecting more of a cheese, like some sort of a cheese fruit kind of a thing. But,
really?
Yeah.
Huh.
But in terms of things that like, I guess I do have to admit that, I now remember that like sometimes like when I'm painting, like house painting and stuff. Like there is something kind of nice about that smell.
Yeah.
Like it almost kind of smells chocolatey somehow to me, like I should eat it.
Yeah, well, I think that also has to do with the texture of the paint a little bit. You know, it has that like thickness when it's going on.
And I guess we do tend to paint, like the painting jobs I've been on, it tends to be kind of like a brownish or a tannish, you know, or like even like a white chocolatey kind of color. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, technically that could be a perfume because perfume is a pretty, I mean, you can define pretty much anything as a perfume. It's a pretty loose definition. It's basically something that you wear and something that smells.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure the professional perfumers out there have a more rigorous definition, but like, for our purposes.
Like they don't count like Irish Spring as a perfume.
But it doesn't necessarily have to smell good or good to everyone, right?
Definitely. Based on some of the perfumes I've smelt on public transportation.
Yeah, no doubt. So for our purposes, let's talk about liquid perfume. You know, the stuff you're going to find in a bottle, you know, a sprayer, a spritzer. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to be a combo of alcohol, water, and whatever key ingredients that evaporate at room temperature that you, you know, want to throw in to make your signature fragrance.
Okay.
And when you're smelling perfume, you're really just sniffing a bunch of evaporating molecules, right? Your nose detects perfume and it sends a message to your brain, creating this perception.
Okay.
Good, bad, indifferent, whatever it may be. And, you know, that's what's going on in the elevator. Have you ever had this experience? I know all of you listeners definitely have. You walk into the elevator, you know, somebody gets on at the next floor, they walk in with them trails this just fragrant cloud of cologne or perfume. And I won't say it's women or ladies or men because, it, you know, I think both
sexes
definitely do this.
Like there was this one dude that I used to work with him in a, before I came to How Stuff Works. And it's like, I remember the day he came in to apply for his job. It was like, you know, like comes in through the door and it's just this stream of just really strong, like cologne was just hanging off of him. And then he left and like the cologne stayed. I think that's why they gave him the job. It's like, it's going to smell
he
like him here
anyway. He made a lasting impression.
Yeah, he did. That man made an impression.
Yeah. When I was in college, this reminded me a lot of Thursday nights, you know, you'd be going out and you get in the elevator with a boy and he would just, you know, the whole elevator would smell like Dracar Noir. Do you remember that cologne?
I think maybe my dad had an old bottle of it and I like found it somewhere and it's like dark looking, right? It's like dark, manly looking cologne.
I think so.
Like the more it looks like whiskey, the more it's okay for guys to wear it.
Yeah. If I sniffed it now, it'd totally take me back. So what's going on with the individual ingredients in those perfumes? Like what's making the Dracar Noir linger so long?
Well, my understanding is that the alcohol works to spread out the different smells, right? Allowing you to pick up the different hints and the complexities of the perfume. Otherwise, you'd be smelling them all at once, right?
Right. So writer Susan Nasser, who wrote the article on our site about how perfume works, was talking about in the case of a perfume oil if you were just to smell that perfume oil, which is the really concentrated essence of the smell, it would kind of be like hearing all the members of an orchestra all play at the same time. Yeah, you're not going to hear the, you know, the tuba kind of rumbling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a perfume oil. But the alcohol, right, it allows you to hear or smell, as the case may be with perfume, all these notes. Not at once. It spreads them out, like you said.
Okay, it's kind of like if you go to a tapas restaurant. And like they bring out, you don't
a topless restaurant?
A tapas restaurant. Where, and it's you don't want all the tapas at once and gobble them down in a hurry. You want to be there for like a lengthy period of time getting them one by one.
Right. Definitely.
All right.
So in that same vein, it makes sense that a lot of perfumes, and when we're talking about perfumes, again, perfume does not apply to women or men. It's just, it's like we said, a smell.
Right.
So they have a three-part smell and each smell is called a note. In the perfume industry, that's what they like to call them, but it's just jargon.
And I was not familiar with this at all before we researched this. It's pretty cool.
And the smells have different rates of evaporation. So on the top, you're going to have your top note, right?
Okay.
And you're going to smell these within 15 minutes of applying. This is where you're going to find kind of the racy, unpleasant, spicy, weird smell, you know, something that the designer threw in to just kind of, you know, be crazy.
This is the don't apply your perfume on the train. Smell, right? When the person next to you decides to put it on and you're like, geez, these are the top notes in action, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And these are the ones, luckily, that evaporate first.
Okay. Good.
So take us through the heart notes.
All right. Well, this apparently starts showing up after 3 to 4 hours after you've gotten off the train, ideally.
Hanging out at work.
Yeah. And these evaporate more slowly from the skin. The phase of the perfume's life tends to be this is the phase that makes the most impact. This is what you remember. This is the prime perfume life stage.
Right. Robert, if you were wearing a floral perfume, do you wear a floral perfume?
No.
Okay. So this is where you'd find your floral notes.
Okay.
Okay. And then you got your base notes, right? And so these form, obviously, the foundation of the perfume, the base of the perfume, and they linger the longest after you douse yourself in the morning, 5 to 8 hours long, in fact.
Okay.
And it's not just the chemistry of the perfume and, you know, the rate of the molecules evaporating. It's, you're a factor too, right? So the top notes of the perfume are going to disappear faster if your skin is nice and dry and warm, rather than if you're kind of cool and oily.
Huh. So you're going to, so when you go shopping for a perfume, you need to sort of carry some of that information with you. Like, no, am I, you know, how my skin is going to behave with it.
Sure. I mean, I guess it wouldn't hurt to keep that in mind. And then how you store the perfume is going to affect the chemistry as well. If you store it in bright light, that can impact the bonds in the fragrance molecules and break them. And then you can have bright sun that can damage perfume within a week's time. And that was according to Luca Turin and Tanya Sanchez, authors of the 2008 book Perfume, A Guide.
Huh. That's the one where the dude kills all the ladies, right?
No, that's fiction.
That's a different novel. Okay.
By Patrick Susskind.
Yeah.
Yeah, the protagonist of that. What is he? He's trying to...
I've seen the movie. I've not read the book.
I read the book. I haven't seen the movie.
Oh, okay. Well, we complete each other in that then. Yeah, he's like... if I remember correctly, he wants to like... He like falls for these different ladies and like refines them into perfume.
Right. He wants to, according to Amazon, I believe, capture the scent of a beautiful young virgin.
That's it. That's what he's trying to do.
And by virgin, I meant virgin.
Yeah.
But right, it was sort of like Silence of the Lambs, but with perfume. What do you think about that?
Yeah, pretty good. The movie was pretty fabulous, pretty visual.
Really?
Yeah, it had Dustin Hoffman as a perfumist in it.
No kidding.
But back to the storage thing. What's weird to me about the whole visible light breaking it down? It's like most perfumes come in like little glass vials, right? I mean,
that's true.
It's just begging to be broken down by the sun.
And they're begging to be displayed, right? I mean, because packaging, of course, is such a big part of perfume as well.
Well, that goes into another podcast that we did on the smell and science.
Yeah, we've been on a smelly bender this week.
Well, there's a whole deal about how the information from our other senses also affect how we perceive a smell. If you tell me that a cheese is cheese, then I'm going to respond better than if you tell me a cheese is body odor. And likewise,
I think in general that's a good assumption.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like they say that it also ends up applying to like the shape of a perfume container or the name or what are all these different factors that they're using to sell it to you. It's like you shape it like an apple, even if it doesn't quite smell like an apple. It's like you're going to be more inclined to think apple when you sniff it.
Right. So smell being much more than just the physical act of sniffing.
Yeah.
So before we move on, I just wanted to touch on, there's one other process that can harm your perfume, and you guys know this is oxidation. So this is what's going to turn your uncorked wine into vinegar, and it can do a number on your bottle of Chanel No. 5 as well.
Okay, so don't keep your perfume out in a like trough on your on your desk. Okay.
Yeah, and storing your perfume at room temperature in the dark and in a spray bottle preserves it well. Maybe a shelf life of 2 years, which is interesting because I think I tend to keep my scents much longer than 2 years. Note to self.
Okay. Got to go home and clear out the perfumes.
Yeah.
Pour them all down the sink.
Yeah. No, I will not do that. So why do we wear perfume? I found this pretty interesting. So the writer, Susan Nasser, interviewed this psychologist, Rachel Hertz, and she's a Brown University, and she's researched smell pretty extensively. Mm-hmm. So Hertz had a couple of ideas about why people wear these scents. You want to take the men ones?
Yeah, and this makes a lot of sense. Like young men wear fragrance to attract women or men, whatever your preference. And of course, that makes perfect sense. And that's like the stereotype too. You know, it's like guys putting on some sort of funky scent generally, and oftentimes, maybe not generally, but often not knowing quite what they're doing when they're picking one out. So that's the young guys. And then the older men, according to Nasser, older men wear it as a nod to the person who gave them the perfume. In other words, I'm wearing this perfume because I got it as a gift and I've got to use the whole bottle or I'm never going to hear the end of it.
And I think you think it smells nice. So
yeah. So I guess it smells nice. I'll wear it if she likes it.
We're going out to dinner. Might as well douse myself a little bit.
Yeah. Generally, I don't receive perfume except from, Bonnie's grandmother. Gave me perfume 1 year.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think we quietly destroyed it.
Hope she's not listening.
I hope not.
So young women may wear it because of friends and media influence. This one actually rang true for me. I remember at a certain point in my life, in middle school, I think, I did start to wear fragrance. And it wasn't because I you know, I...
Wait, you probably wore it. Didn't you, like, wear it earlier? Like, you went and, like, tried on all your mom's perfume at once?
Yeah, that's probably true. I probably did. But, you know, I actually bought a bottle from my local drugstore or something like Baby Soft or I don't even know, some terrible perfume. Not that it's terrible, but I just probably wouldn't buy it now. But it was very much something that all my friends were doing. So it was more like an, you know, a reflection of growing up or something to that effect.
Okay.
So... Hers, the psychologist that that our writer interviewed, says that women in 30s do it just because, you know, they want to. Once you get into your 40s, they're wearing it because they like it. This sounds random to me, though. I mean, you don't like it before then?
Well, I mean, maybe it's kind of like with, you know, like some people's deal with, like, say, beer. You kind of like, you drink, beer tastes horrible at first.
Yeah.
And then supposedly if you drink enough of it, you start to love it. And then you like, it takes a while to, like, build up an appreciation for it. So maybe it's like you spend your 30s, you know, using these perfumes, but you don't really necessarily like it. But, you know, after a while, then you develop this real appreciation for it. And then you're, you know, totally into it.
Yeah,
I can see that being the case.
By 60, again, the women are just wearing it to please others.
Well, maybe they're just nice old ladies. And they're like, I'm just gonna wear this because my son got it for me and it'll make him happy. Kind of a deal, you know?
Right, right.
Old ladies are just nice. That's what I'm saying.
So scents can affect our moods and our behavior, right? We know this. I mean, it can pull up some sort of treasured memory and it can influence our actions. And there have been a couple interesting studies in this vein. I think that you guys have probably heard of the one about the Cinnabon. Have you heard about that? We were talking about this a little bit before the podcast.
Yeah, what was the deal with this again? It's just... The scent of Cinnabon.
Right. So put the scent of Cinnabon in the air. Do it, you know, in a mall.
Okay.
And what you're going to want to do is you're going to get some people involved. You're going to get your participants. And you get one person to drop something.
Okay.
And then see if a stranger picks up that pencil, say, that you dropped. Well, it turns out if you have the smell of Cinnabon in the air, people are more likely to pick up that pencil. The stranger's more likely to pick up that pencil. Good smells... as a correlation with, you know, good behavior. You know, you're going to pick up a pencil. Maybe you'll give directions. Maybe you're just going to be an all-around nice person as long as you're whiffing Cinnabons.
Wow.
It's kind of interesting.
It makes me think of, like, a futuristic society, you know, where everybody is, like, a perfect citizen, and they're doing it because they're just constantly pumping out the odor of Cinnabon.
You know what this really made me wonder, and I didn't have time enough to get into it before the podcast, was what do casinos smell like? I'm not a hardcore gambler, but I had to wonder how they...
Sadness.
Stale cigarettes.
Sadness and Cinnabon.
Those nice old ladies playing the slots. I don't know.
That's a really cool. I'm very curious now.
So there was a study in France that followed a sort of similar Cinnabon protocol, only they checked to see whether a woman who was wearing perfume would influence this sort of similar behavior in strangers. So, you know, she would drop something from her purse and they would see if strangers would help her pick up that object. And in fact, they did. You know, okay. The woman wearing the perfume brought out that behavior again.
She smelled like Cinnabon.
No, she smelled like a different perfume. Okay. No, they did not.
Well, see, they should combine these two studies.
Right. Maybe they have it has the best effect if it's a Cinnabon perfume.
I hope so.
And then there is just one final study that I'll get to here. There's a study published in the Journal of Psychological Science, and that found that a citrus-scented cleanser was associated with people behaving more fairly when they played a game, a classic trust game, according to this article I found in the Boston Globe.
Like apples to apples or what?
I don't know. I don't know what the game was. Yeah, so fair behavior, people picking up pencils for you. I mean, it does seem like scent can influence action. And that's just, you know, a smattering of studies that have been done. There are many more to explore. But let's take a break from that and look at the genetic side.
So each of us has a genetically determined number of odoreceptors or cells in our nose that grab fragrant molecules out of the air around us.
So with more receptors for a class of compounds, like, say, lily smells, you're going to smell lily at a lower concentration, but at normal amounts, the smell could be intense and overwhelming.
All right. But too few receptors can be a problem.
Why is that?
Well, for example, cilantro's fragrance consists of many odors. If your genetic code spells out a variation that reduces your number of receptors for an odor, you may miss one of cilantro's many odors, and it may smell soapy to you. We've touched on this before.
Yeah, we did on the genetic stuff.
Talking about it tasting soapy, and of course, scent and taste are blood brothers.
Indeed. So let's get to the evolution side. One question that people have thrown out a lot are, you know, are our olfactory likes and dislikes programmed? And there's pretty healthy argument on this area. So on the pro side, some people are going to argue that the answer as to whether we like certain smells isn't really genes, but history, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, way, way, way back history.
Right, so, like grazing, like just foraging for food kind of things. Like I smell fruit. I eat fruit. Fruit's great. I wish everything smelled like fruit. It's the Cinnabon thing again.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, right. So that kind of harkens back to our foraging days, our hunting and gathering days. And then, you know, on the other hand, we're not going to like the smell of, you know, urine, feces, or, you know, maybe rotten or fishy smells.
Yeah, because, like, urine could be telling me that somebody else's territory, you know, fecal, all that's going to potentially have parasites and pathogens.
Disease, infectious agents, mm-hmm. Right. So could there be an evolutionary mechanism at work there? That's one thought, school of thought on this.
I'm game to believe that.
Well, what about the other side of the argument?
Well, yeah, there's the other side of the argument that says that smells aren't evolutionary programmed. And this is kind of like the sort of short and dirty version of this is like people can get used to anything, right?
Right. Right. Your culture preference, your personal experience can override sort of any smell. I mean, if you grow up with a latrine smell, maybe it's not going to bother you.
Yeah. You grow up, you know, gutting fish, then the fish smell's not going to bother you.
Back before the days of refrigeration, Nasser writes in her article, the smell of rotten meat was tolerated and even liked in Europe.
Huh.
Yeah, I guess I just don't really have a perception of rotten hamburger meat, per se, just because the refrigerator does play such an important role.
Well, one example that comes to mind is, like, I don't know, if you ever go to, like sort of foreign, or not even foreign, but just kind of, like, I guess, like, sort of Asian, like, kind of, like, fish markets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess just any fish market. It's like, I'm not around them, so when I go to them, it's a bit overpowering.
Right.
But I'm thinking, like, people who are around it a lot are going to be more, less inclined to think it's stinky. And also, if it's, like, more, like, a cultural thing, you're going to tolerate it more.
Yeah, or maybe even, you know, say you're a smoker, right?
Yeah.
You know how smokers can't smell themselves, but if you walk into an elevator with a smoker, you can instantly smell it. Or if you're mm-hmm. riding the train with somebody who, you know, hit happy hour, maybe they can't smell the alcohol on them. But, I mean, it just wafts over to you in a giant cloud of dirty martini.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's really the other side of the argument is that, yeah, like you were saying, we can override any of these preferences. And evolution really doesn't have a whole lot to do with smell. So I think we gave you guys a lot of odor for thought.
Yeah. I mean, I think next time you throw in a little perfume, you might think about it a little differently. And also, like, maybe even, like, go ahead and mark down on your schedule, like, which phase of the perfume is gonna line up with what part of your day. It's like, oh, crap, I got a 3 o'clock, interview, and that's after phase two ends. What am I going to do about my floral notes being gone?
Yeah, so we love to hear from you guys, smelly thoughts or otherwise. So send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com or connect with us on Facebook.
Yep, we're on there as Stuff in the Science Lab. Also find us on Twitter as Lab Stuff. And hey, shoot us some jokes. You know?
Yeah.
Give us some sort of nice, cheesy science joke. Include your name and where you're from, and we will try and throw it up there at the start of the podcast if it's good.
All right, that's all we got. Thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.